Good morning. Welcome to the Business, Finance, and Facilities meeting for November 30th, 2023. Before we start, I'd like to read our land acknowledgement. Before beginning, we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Washoe, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nuwi, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Next is public comment. Before we go to other public comment, I will say for those who would like to call in and offer public comment.
Chair.
Yes. Roll call. I'm sorry. Thank you, Angela. First, roll call.
Chair Carballo.
Here.
Vice Chair Boylan. Regent Brown. Regent Downs.
Here.
Regent Tarkanian. You do have a quorum.
Thank you. Next is public comment. For those who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 999-9889-3151 and passcode 666-666. Is there any public comment here at UNLV? Yes.
Good morning, Chair Carvalho. Vice Chair Boylan, Regents, CFO Patton, Kent Irvin, ERVIN, past President and Director of Community of Government Relations, Nevada Faculty Alliance. I would like to draw your attention to items 7 and 8 on the agenda, the self-supporting budget reports. These reports are, unfortunately, essentially meaningless. Let me explain. A few years ago, the format was changed to avoid very lengthy reports with detail about very many small accounts. But now only accounts over $250,000 in expenditures are included, and the details about those accounts have also been eliminated, so you only have a summary for each major budget. What do those numbers mean? Any account less than $250,000 is not included in the sums. There are hundreds or thousands of smaller accounts that are not included even in the top line totals. A whole lot is not included. That means a whole lot can be hidden. Expenditures from gifts and grants are also excluded from the reports. The NC financial statement for FY 2023 shows $2.06 billion in total revenue for NC. The state operating budget revenue that you'll see today is about half, $1.06 billion. The reported self-supporting budget revenue is $600 million. That leaves $375 million in FY23 revenue that isn't reported to this committee as how it was spent by function or program type. About $100 million of that is probably student fees, although that's hard to calculate from the public reports. The self-supporting budget to actuals report should be revised for the future to include total expense amounts aggregated over all accounts, no matter how they are budgeted, with breaks down by functional program categories and restrictions. The larger accounts should at least be listed individually by name, purpose, and gross expenditures. It wouldn't be an excessive burden for the system to produce executive level reports that are transparent about all the sources of revenue and all expenditures by type. Also, individual institutions should be required to publish budget reports with detail by departments. At UNR, that stopped happening after 2018. Holding the institutions accountable for their revenue and spending is a key fiduciary duty of the Board of Regents. The supporters of SJR 7 complain about a lack of accountability at NSHE. Being more transparent about the overall budget and expenditures would be a step in the right direction. Without this full reporting, the opinion of some legislators that NSHE has plenty of money is hard to counter. I hope these comments are constructive. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment here at UNLV? Is there any public comment on the phone, SES?
There are no callers in the Zoom for public comment at this time.
Thank you. We'll move on to item number two, consent items. Are there any questions, comments, or a motion to approve consent items?
I make a motion to approve.
Motion by Vice Chair Boylan.
I'll second the motion.
Second by Regent Downs. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries. Item number three, first quarter fiscal year 2023-2024 fiscal exceptions for self-supporting budgets. CFO Vitone.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho. Before I start comments on this report, I wanted to mention that you may hear a recurring theme in some of my comments today on the reports. You recall that recently the board approved some new policy changes to address concerns that were raised during the LCB audit, and some of those policies necessarily will result in some adjustments to the reports that you're receiving today. However, the timing between approving those new policies and providing these 2023 and first quarter 2024 reports would not have allowed for the adjustments to be made to those reports. So you're getting some reports that are reflecting some work in progress as campuses have been working toward addressing those LCB findings. The first report you're getting, the first quarter fiscal exception report, is one of those reports that has a couple of new accounts appearing on it that are a result of the concerns raised during the audit. The board policy that brings this report to the board Business and Finance Committee is asking to report those accounts that have negative balances at the end of the quarter, referring to them as fiscal exception. And the report includes those accounts and many that you've seen before, some of the recurring items that have been reported, including things like the ASUN Wolf Shop, the UNLV GME accounts, the CSN Dental Faculty Practice, and UNLV Athletics that you've seen before. The two new accounts are accounts at UNR and UNLV that are titled Special Project Funding, and those represent accounts that are, for UNLV, this is the first quarter that account's been in place. It's a result of the Gateway building purchase that you might recall approving last year. And at UNR, a similar activity where the campuses are using their unrestricted funds as a mechanism to invest in priorities for the campus, using the unrestricted balances that appear in that self-supporting budget book, your self-supporting accounts. They're not ongoing programs. They represent campus investment, and that, I think, is the rationale why those accounts in the past were not considered fiscal exception, because they're functioning as designed and they're not operational programs. However, in the interest of transparency and addressing that LCB concern, those accounts were added to the report. As we start working on adjusting the reports for in response to the comprehensive policy changes, this activity, I think, may more likely move to the self-supporting budget report. But for this session, given the time that we had to put the reports together, we just covered it here and wanted to make sure that was covered. So I'll pause there and ask if there's any questions.
Are there any questions from the members of the committee? No? Okay. This is for information only, so we will move on to item number four, first quarter fiscal year 2023-2024 budget transfers, state-supported or self-supporting operating budgets. CFO Vitone.
Again, thank you, Chair. Before you, the first quarter fiscal first quarter budget transfer, fiscal year 24 budget transfer is over 500,000 between functions. This is another report that is before you based on the board policy to review these functional reclassification of budget over these amounts. And similar to my prior comments on the LCB findings, the activity you're getting on this report has not previously been reported. But we're reporting it here because they are transactions that were recorded in the financial system in the budget accounts. What these transactions represent is just some startup activity that occurs normally at the beginning of the fiscal year as the campuses are working on getting budgets loaded into the system, and in particular the challenge that arises in a even year when your timing for completing and preparing and loading budgets for the new fiscal year overlap with the budget closings in the legislature, and so there's a lot of scrambling at the toward the end of the prior fiscal year and the start of the new fiscal year to get budgets in the system. So you have what the campus will call central reserves that are managed centrally, but then as the dust settles, if you will, and the budgets are finalized, they'll move those out into appropriate accounts. So that's what's summarized in the report there for you. And again, I'll pause in case there's any questions.
Any questions from the members of the committee? No? All right, thank you. So we will move on to item number five then. Fiscal year 2022-2023, NC State operating budget to actual comparison. CFO Vitone.
Thank you again, Chair. I think I've been forgetting to mention I'm Chris Vitone for the record. Item number five is the fiscal year 23 state-supported operating budget to actual comparison. I would just want to point out a few highlights for you if you would turn to page five. The report includes in the back all the detailed budget accounts, the state budget accounts that are managed by the campuses. On page five is a summary at the system level, so you can see the system-wide activity. The top of the report is all your state appropriation, and so I just mentioned there you see the fiscal year actual state appropriation of about $648 million, followed by the second half of the page there, the second section being all your other revenue sources. This is where you have the state portion of the registration fees, all of your non-resident tuition, and some other miscellaneous student fees. One of the larger items there in the FY23 budget to actual report you see is the ARP funds, the ARP funds from the COVID recovery programs, where the state allocated $46 million to the system for position restoration as part of the last cycle. So in total on the non-state appropriation sources, you have $417 million of revenues and a total system operating budget of just over $1 billion there. And then if you would turn to page seven and eight is where you see the expenditure side of the system budget summarized for you in two different ways. The first on page seven being by function, so you see the distribution of expenses through the system in your categories of instruction, research, student services, academic support, and the like there. Again, the total being just over $1 billion. And on page eight, that same summary of expenses, but then presented in a ledger summary format, so you can see the nature of the expenses in professional and faculty salaries, graduate assistant stipends, technologists, classified staff. You can see the breakdown of the expenses there. With that, I guess I'll pause and ask if there's any questions.
Yes, Vice Chair Boylan.
Just a suggestion. I guess everybody can hear me anyway, but I think he needs to pull the microphone closer to himself so you can I think people at the back can't hear you too. Oh, I'm just deaf.
Thank you.
I don't know. All right. Yes. Thanks.
Thanks, Regent Blanton.
Are there any questions regarding this budget? Or I would like to entertain a motion to approve it.
Yeah, just to confirm, so there is a a $22 million surplus in this because the expenditures were less than the budget? Am I reading that correctly?
Regent Downs, Christopher Thon, just to, no, actually, in this case, there's a $22 million deficit in revenue and a reduction in expenses to match the revenue.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So the, if you, in the other revenue sources, I would note both registration fees and non-resident tuition came in under revenue as a result of the those revenues being less than forecast in the state's okay. operating budget. So the expenses are reduced accordingly.
I got optimistic thinking, oh, look.
Thank you for that question.
I move to approve this.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Oh, okay.
I don't, who is that from? I'm sorry, I can't tell.
Regent Brown.
Okay, thank you. So a second from Regent Brown. Any other discussion regarding the this approval? So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number six, fiscal year 2023-2024 NCHI state supported operating budget. CFO Vitone.
Again, thank you, Chair Cavallo, Chris Vitone, NCHI CFO. The item six is state supported operating budget for fiscal year 24. So it's basically the same report as the item number five, but this time this is the new year budget, and it's a comparison of the fiscal year 24 budget to the fiscal year 23 budgets. Going through the report, I'd like to go through the same summary, but first I want to apologize and note that we do have some corrections to make to some of the summary pages. The detailed budget accounts in the report are all accurate. In rolling those up with a significant number of template changes that were needed for the new appropriations, there was some linking issues there that resulted in the summaries not actually working out in total. So I'll call those numbers out to you as we go through the pages. We do have those pages corrected so that when we publish the report on the system's website, we'll be able to correct them. But we're not able to do that for you, unfortunately, for supplemental today. But nonetheless, the detailed budgets, which are those budgets that are reconciled with the state and managed at the campus level, those in the book are all accurate. And so with your approval today, I think we'll be okay on those budgets. But just wanted to highlight, and I will, as we go through it, the corrections we'll be making. And in that regard, then, starting on page 10 of your report, this is a summary of the appropriation activity for fiscal years 24 and 25. And in this case, the corrections are, you'll notice the COLA figure for fiscal year 25 was not included on this page. And there's a missing appropriation for fiscal 25 on AB 37 also. So those are both corrected in the report. We have those pages. The fiscal year 24 column, which is the subject of this report, is all accurate there.
I have a question.
Sure.
Did you say page 10?
Yes. Of item number six.
Oh, okay. Forget it.
The reports look the same, for sure, and a lot of numbers. Turning then to page 15 is the first page summary of the system-wide fiscal year 24 operating budget compared to fiscal year 23. The total here, just over $1.2 billion, is accurate. There's some minor adjustments that'll flow through. I didn't want to point that out on this page, but for this page, you see significant new appropriation activity in fiscal year 24, and so we've itemized those for you, and we can so that you'd be able to refer back to the legislative summary that you received in earlier meetings in interest of those items, and also to help understand the pretty significant increase in state appropriation
for fiscal year 24. So you see a total at the top of $850 million and a difference of $203 million, $204 million, which clearly is a pretty significant increase for the system. To highlight some of those items, where they came from, recall the $46 million of ARP funds that were position restoration. Those funds were converted or restored in state appropriation for fiscal 24. In addition, one of the system's priorities for the session was the restoration of the operating side of the budget cuts, the 12% budget reduction. So that's about $36 million. And then you have the COLA for fiscal 24 that's at the top there of $55 million. So you can see, and then all of those special appropriations, you can see how it wraps up or adds up to that $204 million pretty quickly. On the other revenue source side, again, you have the state portion of the registration fees and the non-resident tuition, and then your other miscellaneous revenue categories on that end, totaling about $379 million for a total system-wide budget of just over $1.2 billion. And then flipping over to pages 17 and 18, these are a couple of the pages that we're going to have to insert corrections. Again, the issue being that the total expenses should match the $1.228 billion, and so we have some minor corrections to make from the templates that rolled this up. I wanted to call your attention on page 17, which is the functional classification. Here you'll notice a pretty significant increase in institutional support, and I would imagine you may have a question about that, so I just wanted to highlight there. That's a function of how some of the special appropriations are budgeted initially. In that number is the $20 million for the nursing program expansions that is held initially in a special projects account that's categorized under the institutional support function as those funds are distributed to the campuses for the purpose of those programs. I'll expect those functions to change. There's also in there about $8 million of appropriations to SCS related to dark fiber expansion and some equipment replacements that were funded. And then another $2 million of that is the system special appropriation for the formula funding committee. So grand total within that $47 million of about $30 million of special appropriations that are for particular purposes that, again, $20 million of that will change functionally. And then page 18 being the same total of expenses distributed by the classifications of salaries and non-salaries. And I'll just pause there if there's any questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Vitone. Are there any questions from committee members?
No, ma'am.
No. Okay, this is an item for possible action. I'll entertain a motion to approve the fiscal year 2023-2024 NC State supported operating budget.
So moved.
I have a motion from Regent Downs. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Second from Vice Chair Boylan. And I'll also mention that this motion will also include the small changes to the outline that CFO Vitone outlined for us. Okay, so all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 7, fiscal year 2022-2023. And she's self-supporting budget to actual comparison. CFO Vitone.
Again, thank you, Chair Carvalho, Chris Vitone. So the next report, item number 7, is your similar to the state-supported operating budget reports. You have two reports coming up, the first one being a comparison of budget to actual for the prior fiscal year 23, and the next item, number 8, being the 2024 budgets. Before I mention the comments on the 23 actual, I will mention this is one of the reports that I know will have some adjustments to responding to the policy changes and the LCB comments, and some of those changes will also directly help with the public comment that we heard from Dr. Irvin this morning. So I just wanted to point that out. And also, I would apologize because I know in preparing for today's meeting, I was listening to last year's meeting, and I realized there were some suggestions made last year about expanding that detail also. That again, I think you understand in the timing, you had the legislative session in between and transition again with myself at the system office. So those changes we did not get to make this year, but with the LCB policy changes that you made and the interests that were raised, we'll certainly be working on that before you see these reports again. So for now, let me just go through a couple highlights for you, though. Page 7, if you'll turn to page 7, this is similar to the state-supported operating budget. This is a summary at the system level of all the self-supporting activity or non-state activity. Again, noting this is self-supporting activity, but it does not include all non-state activity that campuses are managing. In particular, I'd mentioned research activity, sponsored program accounts. This is generally more fee and self-generating revenue activity. So again, in the top section, you see the components of those fees, including a large component being the non-state portion of student fees, non-state portion of the student registration fee, in addition to other student fees. Sales and service category includes things like your auxiliary activities on campus, room and board, athletics programs, ticket sales, things of that nature, and some of the other revenue categories. So you see total self-supporting revenue generated of $600,000. There are the other categories that add up to that $1.2 billion include transfers in, which is transfers between accounts, and then the balance forward, the $400 million of beginning balance. The second section of the report, similar to the state operating, is your expenditure categories. On this page, it's the categories by function. And then if you'll turn to the next page, page 8, it's the same schedule with the expense distribution shown in the functional class, in the operational classification, the ledger classification. And I think I'll pause there to ask if there's any questions.
Vice Chair Boylan.
Thank you, ma'am. It says, all right, okay. Other revenue on page 7. What is other revenue? I'm kind of lost in that. I saw it earlier, and I'm like, that's a big chunk of other. What is other revenue? Do you have it right now?
I certainly not all the details, okay. Regent Boylan. I can offer, one item I know you'd find in that number is campus lease revenues, where campuses are managing lease revenues. That would be in that figure, but I would have to work with the accounts and the budget, and most likely the campuses, to get some more details. So I could do that and get
that. Okay, appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the question. Are there any other questions or comments from the committee? This is also for possible action, so I'll entertain a motion to approve the fiscal year 2022-2023 ENSHE self-supporting budget to actual comparison.
So moved.
I have a motion from Regent Downs. Is there a second?
I'll second it. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, ma'am.
I'll take the second from Regent Tarkanian. Any other comments or questions? Call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Fiscal year 2023-2024 ENSHE self-supporting budget. CFO Vitone.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho. Again, Chris Vitone. And I won't spend too much time on this report. Again, it's the same format that we just looked at with the actuals, but this being the 24 budgets and the comparison to the prior approved budgets for 23. Again, turning to page 7, the same summary with the revenues at the top, in this case totaling $676 million for incoming revenue, and expenditures at the bottom by functional classification on page 7 and on page 8, the same schedule with the expenditures summarized at the ledger categories by classification. So I'll pause there if there's any questions.
Questions from the members?
I do have a question. It's probably, I don't know if this is the right time to ask this, but I'm curious, when a property is sold by an institution, where does that go into the budget? Or does that go into a separate fund for like capital improvements?
Thank you, Regent Towns. It's a good question. And I think the answer is probably it depends. And we probably would have to look property sale transaction by transaction. I think quite commonly property transactions are plant transactions, and that is another category of accounts that you do not find in the self-supporting budget report because they're project accounts. But we would have to look property by property because it is not necessarily handled the same way. It may depend on whether there were deed restrictions or other restrictions associated with the original acquisition of property, or what funds were used to acquire property, and things of that nature. So,
thank you. I've heard there have been questions often like, we sell a property, where does the money go? And so it'd just be nice at some point to know if we could get a breakdown, on a bird's eye view or 30,000 foot
sure.
breakdown, just of where this, how the money's being dispersed on an annual basis. So, thank you.
Thank you for that question, Regent Downs. Are there any other questions for CFO Baton? This is another item for possible action. I will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Second from Vice Chair Boylan. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Aye.
That motion carries. We will move on to item number 9, update regarding refunding Series 2013 Certificates of Participation and Potential Use of Savings, Nevada State University.
Good morning. My name is Brandy Smith. I'm the Interim Vice President for Finance and Business Administration for Nevada State University. I'm speaking today on behalf of President Darian Pollard. As you'll recall, this Nevada State came before the Board of Regents in the September 21st meeting, at which time the board approved for the university to seek refunding of our 2003 series bonds, which actually financed our Rogers Student Center and our Kasner Academic Building. At that time, we were anticipating the refinance would yield $285,000 in annual savings. We then subsequently came before the BFF committee in the September meeting and proposed a potential use of funds, which would be to purchase the Dawson building, which we're currently on a long-term lease with the city of Henderson. Since that time, the market has experienced significant volatility, and shortly before the bond sale was to go forward, the annual savings was reduced to between $40,000 to $60,000, which is significantly reduced from the $285,000 and would really hamper the goals of what we had intended to use for those funds. So we had postponed the sale at that time. We are currently monitoring and hope to, again, seek refinancing. We were hoping early December, but it's looking more like February, where we'll go before the Board of Finance Committee. Right now, the annual savings amount is around the $200,000 range, so it has rebounded, but we're still monitoring at this time, and we'll present updates for the board. I have spoken with the City of Henderson, and they are still in agreement that they're ready to work with us at whatever point we are able to refinance. So at this time, I would entertain any questions.
Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Hearing none, I'll thank you for that update and look forward to hearing hopefully from you again regarding a positive movement in the refunding. Thank you. Item number 10, first modification of lease agreement at Southside School located at 190 East Liberty Street, Reno, for UNR. And to present this, I have President Sandoval.
Morning, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Boylan, members of the committee. For the record, Brian Sandoval, President of the University of Nevada, Reno. We respectfully request your approval of the first modification of lease agreement at the Southside School, located, as you said, at 190 East Liberty Street, which is diagonally across from the Innovation Center in downtown Reno. And just for perspective, it's a beautiful historic brick building built in 1936 and is on the National Registry of Historic Places. The university currently leases the building from the city of Reno for the nominal amount of $7,268 per year. My rudimentary math is $605 per month. The lease in its current state will expire in March of 2024. You know, in terms of the use of the building through education and community outreach partnerships, the university has had the opportunity to host after-school programs. There's a beautiful robotics lab in the upper story of the school and provide a safe meeting space for K-12 students, teachers, and mentors. We've also been able to create opportunities for local startup companies led by faculty and students as well as local community members such as DRI and EDON who make use of the building. And that building is also the home to the Gwynn Center, which recently occupied that and had a ribbon cutting. And I'll talk a little bit about that later today. But in any event, this modification before you today would extend the original triple net lease for 2 years until March 31st of 2026. It also includes two successive options to extend the lease for 1 year each under the same terms and conditions, which we really like, provide certainty. The total term in the modification is 4 years and will extend the original lease beyond 5 years. Hence the reason why we're here before you today. Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, we respectfully request your favorable consideration of this item, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, President Sandoval. Are there any questions from the members of the committee? I do have one question for you, President. So where are the funds? What's the source of funds to pay for this lease?
Source of funds comes from our research and innovation. And I anticipate another question, Madam Chair. Let me find my notes. So we do, as I mentioned, we pay $7,268 per year. There's also a nonprofit that is a tenant in the building, and we collect approximately $42,000 in rent. So that covers the annual cost of the lease, and that money goes back to research and innovation.
Thank you for that information. I appreciate it. Seeing that there are no other questions, I will entertain a motion to approve the first modification of the lease agreement between UNR and the City of Reno for the Southside School located at 190 East Liberty Street in Reno, Nevada, and to further authorize the execution of the lease modification, any non-material or corrective amendments to the lease modification, and any other ancillary agreements or documents or applications that may be required to implement the lease modification, and also to approve that the Chancellor review and she Chief General Counsel also review all of the documents to be sure that that everything is finalized correctly. So I will entertain that motion.
So moved.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Vice Chair Boylan. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, President Sandoval.
Thank you, committee.
Item number 11, Campus Village Lease Termination, UNLV. President Whitfield.
Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee. Let me start by taking a little bit of privilege and introducing you to the new CFO for UNLV, Casey Wyman. He is in part here with Dave Frommer as we asked this morning to request the approval to terminate a long-term lease agreement with Campus Village Group, LLC, for office space of the same name. During the September 21, 2021 meeting, UNLV requested to enter into an agreement, and it was approved. But because of the after effects of the pandemic, office space is now in less demand, and the ability to finance and develop new construction projects, specifically office space, is becoming increasingly difficult. As a result of this and other factors, UNLV was offered the opportunity to retain the lease at an increased rate or to terminate the lease with no penalty. After an in-depth analysis, it was determined that UNLV's best option is to terminate the lease. With this in mind, I respectfully offer this for your consideration.
Thank you, President Whitfield. Are there any questions from the members of the committee on this item? Yes, Vice Chair Boylan.
Thank you, ma'am. Dr. Whitfield, thanks for that, but I'm just a wee bit confused. What did you say, why you are wanting to cancel it again?
Because the option that we were given was either to cancel or to be able to have the lease at an increased rate.
Okay.
There's a lot of details behind it. Mr. Frommer can provide significant depth in that. But it is that what you're seeing now is that financial institutions are not as excited about supporting the creation of more office space because they believe, and I think this is partly the pandemic, that people are doing more remote, that they don't need as much office space, and so financing for it is harder to get. So they are, the Campus Village Group LLC is reconsidering what they're going to do, how they're doing their financing, all of that, but one of their outcomes or one of their proposals was to increase the rate, and we thought that rather than taking an increased rate, that we would actually terminate the lease and we'd find other ways to be able to meet the space that we were going to get from that particular offering.
Thank you, President. Appreciate it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for that question. I have a question, President Whitfield. So with the termination of this lease, how does that impact UNLV's master plan with regard to properties that are adjacent to the current campus area?
We are going to have to find alternative locations for the entities that we wanted to move into that space because I forgot how long we have. We've got at least 2 or 3 years. There's going to be plenty of time to be able to modify. And as you well know, master plans were meant to be changed. So we'll be looking into that. If this is approved by the board, we'll start looking into how we might restructure that. We have had a lot of movement for other things on campus, and so we think we'll be able to accommodate the folks that we were going to try to move into that space.
Thank you for that information. This is for possible action, so I will entertain a motion to approve the termination of the long-term lease agreement entered into with Campus Village LLC for 50,530 rentable square feet of space and associated parking at the Campus Village property. I'll further request approval that the Chancellor be authorized to finalize, approve, and execute the lease termination agreement and any other ancillary agreements required to terminate the lease.
So moved.
Thank you for that motion, Regent Downs. Is there a second?
Second.
Second from Regent Brown, I think I heard first. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 12, U.S. Department of Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration grant, notice of federal interest for the Science and Engineering Building at the UNLV Maryland campus. President Whitfield.
Thank you, Chair and Vice Chair and members of the committee. Today, we're requesting approval to execute the notice of federal interest on the Maryland campus for the installation of a 3T, I had to put that little extra piece in there, the 3T fMRI scanners that we were granted in some supported funding. the UNLV Brain Health Department in the School of Integrated Health Sciences was awarded about $4.5 million in grants from the U.S. Department of Health, U.S. Department of Human Services for this project, which once completed will have a profound effect and impact for health care and health training in Southern Nevada by providing the opportunities for student training as a part of UNLV's health physics curriculum. Similar to the grant for improvements at the Shadow Lane campus, which was approved by the board back in March, this grant requires a notice of federal interest when the federal government provides funding for substantial improvement on real estate property. Therefore, I respectfully offer this for your consideration.
Thank you, President Whitfield. Questions or comments from the members of the committee? I'm not hearing any. I do have one question. You mentioned that the acquisition of this equipment will benefit the community. So will for lack of a better word, patients or healthcare providers be able to use this for diagnostic approaches, or how will this benefit the community?
That will be part of the services that this particular instrument will actually be able to provide. And so through not only our health physics program, but the School of Medicine for others when they need to do functional imaging, they'll be able to use this. You actually raise a very interesting question that we've already started trying to deal with, which is that how do you actually schedule people to be able to use it? We have a feeling because there's not a lot of these, this is one of the higher level instruments, which provides, you know, great granularity, great clarity, that it will be of interest to folks, and so we're going to figure out a way in which we can make sure that it's fair. It will have its primary source for to be able to be training, but in that training will be services provided to people in the community that are coming in for diagnostic tests.
Thank you. Also, it shows on our briefing paper, actually on the agenda as well, that the fiscal impact may be up to $30,000 for the parcelization, if that's a word, of this building. Do you know if that seems like a high number for that work? Do you know if it really will be that much, or do you know of a breakdown on that?
Let me ask David Frommer to come and provide some other details.
Yes,
about
thank you.
That particular element.
Thank you, President Whitfield, and thank you, Chair Carvalho, and members of the committee. For the record, David Frommer, UNLV Associate Vice President, Planning, Construction, and Real Estate. That is an estimate with some contingency built in. Essentially, that process is campus parcels are not kind of drawn building by building. They're broader swaths of the campus in terms of how the campus land was acquired over time. So the intent of that parcelization, if that is a word, is to essentially limit the notice of federal interest to a smaller piece of campus land so that that encumbrance on title ultimately is the minimum required to meet the notice of federal intent. Included in that parcelization would be a survey process. We'd engage a surveyor. We would go through Clark County in this case in terms of their real property division to do the mapping. So I believe that is a estimate that has some room for contingency if any surprises come up. My hope would be that we would not reach that full $30,000 amount, but in the interest of full disclosure, in case something came up that required more services or was more complex than anticipated, we just wanted to provide a conservative estimate for the committee so that you had a sense of what the full extent could be in the worst case scenario.
Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it. It brings up in my mind, well, I won't say it because it has nothing to do with this agenda item necessarily. So I will entertain a motion for approval to execute the notice of federal interest, which will grant the federal government the ability to record a lien against a portion of NCHI-owned real property, commonly known as UNLV Maryland campus, bearing the Clark County Assessor parcel number 162-22-601-001 for the purposes of an HRSA grant compliance requirement. Further approval is requested to allow the chancellor to be authorized to finalize, approve, and execute any other ancillary agreements or documents required to finalize, to proceed, I'm sorry, with the project, including but not limited to documents needed to finalize the subdivision mapping process and re-recording of the notice of federal interest. So I will entertain that motion.
So moved.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Regent Brown. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Item number 13, land gift to DRI from the city of Boulder City, Nevada. President Kamut. I'm sorry, President Acharya.
Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair Reasons. I'm very honored to share information about a land gift DRI has received from Boulder City. DRI has operated in Boulder City since early 1970s, and our Boulder City Research Facility was constructed in 1976 on 3 acres of land donated by Boulder City. Concurrently, DRI was allowed to use a 2/3 acre city-owned parcel adjacent to our existing Boulder City facility. Now, Boulder City, led by support from Boulder City Mayor Dr. Joe Hardy, wishes to gift DRI the 2/3 acre parcel with an appraised value of $142,500. DRI will continue to use the land to support research programs. Our due diligence efforts in support of accepting the gift finds there are no environmental or title issues with the property. Thank you to Mayor Hardy and the citizens of Boulder City for this generous gift and their tremendous ongoing support. Now we ask the board to accept this generous gift on behalf of DRI by delegating to the Chancellor the authority to finalize and execute the documents associated with the transfer of the property. And we're happy to take any questions, Chair.
Thank you, President Acharya. Are there any questions from the committee members?
Yes, I have a question.
Please, Regent Downs.
So under utility easements 6B, it mentions in the event the city desires to relocate, remove, or eliminate such utilities or easements that the cost be borne by DRI. Is that something that we have to be concerned about? Is that going to be significant, or do we know about any utility easements there?
I'm going to call maybe Mike Wixom. You were involved in this. Can you help me with this?
Yes, thank you for the record, Michael Wixom. When we, Special Real Estate Counsel for Enchi, when we originally took a look at this particular grant, there were really two issues that we had to address. The first had to do with potential encumbrances on title, and the second had to do with the environmental condition of the property. The environmental condition of the property is clean. There's an environmental report that shows that it's clean. And then there are no particular encumbrances on title at this point in time, so title is clear. Going forward, should additional easements be required, then they would come back to the committee in the normal course for the operation, easements for the operation of the property. They would come back to the committee in the normal course for approval. Does that answer your question? Region?
Well, it does. I just didn't know if there is any. I mean, is this just a standard, like, boilerplate type of statement in an agreement like this, or
yes.
Is there any potential that this is going to cost other money? And I want to be on the record saying that thank you to the City of Boulder for this gift. We appreciate it. I'm just curious about any liabilities that we're going to be incurring with that.
Thank you for the record, Michael Wixom, Special Enchi Real Estate Counsel. Any liabilities for costs would be, relatively speaking, nominal in the sense that they would just be the costs associated with the preparation and the recording of the easement agreement. And we do all those all the time at a nominal cost. So in that regard, I don't anticipate that there would be a significant cost to the system or to DRI. Is that responsive?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Also written down that we do have existing property adjacent to it, 3 acres that we've been managing, or we've owned that since 1970s. We've not had any issues. So it's just a property that TRI is already using. That was still, it still belonged to the city of Boulder City, and so they now want to give that to us.
Okay.
So we don't anticipate any additional cost down the road.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for that question. Any other questions from members of the committee? Then I will entertain a motion for approval to accept the gift of the 0.65-acre vacant parcel from the City of Boulder City, Nevada, with further approval to request that the Chancellor be authorized to finalize, approve, and execute any other ancillary agreements or documents required to proceed with the acceptance of the gift, but not limited to documents needed to finalize the recording of the deed accepting the gift.
So moved.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Is there a second?
Second.
Second from Regent Arcanian. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, President Acharya. Item number 14, Facilities Master Plan Addendum, TMCC. President Hilgerson.
Wait a minute. There we go. Good morning, Budget Finance Committee and staff and all of those in the audience. First of all, I want to say I'm very grateful to Regent Carvalho and also Council Wixom for assisting TMCC with this master plan amendment. And I probably should tee this up by saying that this is really a two-step process with a lot of communication and collaboration that continues to occur and that needs to occur before what I consider the most significant step two in the process. So step one in the process is today, and that is I am seeking approval to amend our TMCC master plan so that signals that we feel this project is becoming a fast priority for TMCC. The second step, which would occur at a later board meeting, would be actually obtaining permission to pull the trigger and break the ground and actually complete phase one of what I see as a phase two project related to emergency medical services and fire training. So this is just step one today, and I will commit as the team at TMCC to work very closely moving forward with our key partners, and that includes the University of Nevada, Reno, the Redfield Foundation, and also nearby community partners who have some cool stuff going on adjacent to the actual property. So to summarize, we are embarking on a project to build a new emergency medical services and fire training center. If you recall, and I hope you do, at the September board meeting, the institutional highlight for TMCC was indeed this program. And during those highlights, we showed the growth that is occurring, particularly in firefighter training. Not only are we serving many in northern Nevada, but we're serving training needs in several states because fires don't recognize county lines and fires don't recognize state boundaries. Fires don't work that way, and neither does the need for firefighting and firefighter who are very well trained. And I'm very proud of this program. We've seen significant growth under the leadership of Director Mike Schultz, who is really leaning in and serving the need. I will also say that the importance of the fire training program relates to climate change. And that is, again, a key value for TMCC is building resiliency amidst climate change. And we know that in the northern and in the western United States, the way to become resilient is to be ready to fight fires because they are occurring more frequently. So with that said, we are stepping up to meet the demand and the need, and the Redfield campus is the ideal site for the center. The Redfield campus is currently the site where training is occurring, both in emergency medical services and fire training, except for our training drills are now held at the Carson City Fire Station number 52. This fire station is the only tower left available in our region. A closer tower was recently sort of decommissioned because it is in such a state of decay it can no longer handle the burns that firefighters require for training. So we're down to one training center, and it's that center in Carson City is accommodating six academies, monthly fire department trainings. This has created logistical challenges to get our students the training that they need, which is why this project has risen to the number one priority for TMCC at this point in time, and frankly, the number one priority for firefighting in our region, where from my head. The location of the EMS and Fire Training Center at the Redfield campus would provide additional space and an ideal location. It allows TMCC to partner with multiple agencies that are in urgent need of trained personnel. So we also intend to rent this facility out to other departments so that that responsibility is not falling on the one training center left standing in Carson City. That will also provide revenue for TMCC, and that revenue will outweigh the cost. So, currently, we have the Fire Academy. Classes are held at the Health Science Center. We have Fire Science Technology, Certificate of Achievement, 30 credits, and a stackable 60-credit Fire Technology, Fire Suppression Applied Associate degree. We have Wildland Firefighting, Workshop Certification, and Workshop Classes. These are the courses that are serving a multi-state area. Hundreds of firefighters are coming to get additional training through TMCC. EMT, or Emergency Medical Technician, Basic Skills Certificate is also located at Redfield. The paramedic courses, located at Redfield. And, of course, we offer our bachelor's in Emergency Management and Homeland Security, which is an applied bachelor's degree. And we think we're getting really good at providing these degree pathways to students. Locating the EMS and Fire Training Center on the Redfield campus will provide an excellent synergy for students in these areas with the courses and programs currently offered at the campus. So, the two phases. Phase one, and the one that is most needed, is called a fire tower. And a fire tower, and the one that we are seeking approval and permitting requirements for, would require collaboration with these folks. The Redfield Campus Board, which includes representatives from the Redfield Foundation, a representative, representatives from the University of Nevada, Reno, and representatives from TMCC. This group is an advisory board to a governing board, which includes President Sandoval, myself, and Ken Cole from the Redfield Foundation. So we have more work to do to make sure that we're all on the same page. The fire tower would also require permitting from Washoe County Air Quality Management for source permitting, the Nevada State Public Works for utility and concrete foundation work, the state of Nevada for modular building erection, likely the state division of manufactured housing. We are seeking to build what's called a Class B tower. A Class B tower is in line with our environmental sustainability targets and goals. The fuel that's used is natural gas or propane. The flames are contained, because of this, to the ignition source. Smoke is minimal and fuel is clean. If smoke is introduced, it is from a smoke machine it's from a smoke machine that includes mineral and a glycerin mixture. And again, that means that it's not spreading carbon-filled smoke in the air in the nearing community. Training is focused on PPE and extinguishing the fire, and the Washoe County Air Quality Management regulates CO2 source permits. These are very, very careful burns designed to help firefighters understand how to manage real fires. I will also say that the burns in a fire tower of this nature might occur maybe once a week at the most, and that would include those who are renting it. The fire tower is also necessary to train firefighters to figure out how do you get a heavy hose up a three-story tower? How do you get a ladder very quickly erected up a three-story tower, right? So that facility is also used for other trainings that do not require actual burns. Phase two would be a couple of classrooms, some offices, just because we're having such an expansion in enrollments that we need more space. And again, this is just part one, just adding it to the master plan. Our TMCC master plan needs updating in general. There's a few things that have been completed on the plan There's also some things that we've shifted our priorities, and they need to just be removed from the plan. But this one needs to be added as soon as we can so that we can continue the hard work that needs to be done to actually see this project come to fruition. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, President Hilgerson. Are there questions from the committee? Regent Towns?
Yes, thank you, President Hilgerson. I had a question. I'm looking at the map of the area, and is it going to be built to the east, roughly northeast of the TMCC portion of the Redfield campus? Is that the plan, or where is that going to be constructed?
I almost want to. Are you looking at this map? Which I'm not sure.
I'm looking at Google Maps.
You know, I'm so directionally impaired when it is. So I'm going to have to get back to you on that, unless Mike Pearl can answer the question. Vice President of Finance and Government Relations, Mike Pearl. Is it east? It is east.
So kind of down the hill a bit. Okay. I mean, my one concern about it is I think it could be very useful for the community and for obviously TMCC and INSHI and other agencies. The aesthetics of a fire tower are never beautiful. I mean, this doesn't look bad. I've seen concrete ones throughout in a couple different places in Reno. But is there going to be much opposition from the community? That's my concern. Are people going to be concerned about what it does to the Galena community?
I think the short answer to your question is I don't know, but I hope not. But that would have to be addressed between step one and step two.
Okay.
So assuming that this is approved today, that really signals my TMCC team to start really interacting with the community and making sure that we can get those partners in support. I will say that there does need to come a point, and for those of you who know me, you know I'm very direct, where the not in my backyard reasoning doesn't work anymore. We need trained firefighters, and those firefighters may be protecting those houses in that neighboring community. But I do think it is important to restate that this is a Class B tower, and I think that's really, really key for the surrounding communities. It's a relatively small footprint compared to many buildings, so it's not as massive as one would think.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments for President Hilgerson?
Yes, Regent please. Carvalho, I believe that I assume that you or General Counsel Wixom needs to also clarify the work that's being done on the 1995 MOU with the Redfield Foundation.
I will go to Mr. Wixom on that.
Thank you. For the record, Michael Wixom, Special Real Estate Counsel to the system. We've taken a look at the original Redfield campus agreements. We're reviewing those at this time, and in conjunction with UNR and TMCC, we were going to suggest that the approval of this item be subject to the clarification of any issues that may arise in connection with the original agreements, which are legacy agreements and go back a number of years. And as we go forward, we just need to make sure that what we're doing is consistent with what was intended then and with those agreements and with the intention and the cooperation of the Redfield campus. And so the language we were going to suggest is that item 14 be approved subject to the clarification of any issues that may arise in connection with the restrictions included in the original gift of the property to ANSHI by the Redfield Foundation.
Thank you, Mr. Wixom. With that, I will entertain a motion to approve an addendum to the 2023 addendum to the TMCC Facilities Master Plan that also includes approval subject to the clarification of any issues that may arise in connection with the restrictions included in the original gift of the property to ANSHI by the Redfield Foundation.
So motion to approve.
I have a motion from Regent Boylan and a second from Regent Brown. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item number 15, new business. Is there any new business from the committee? Regent Downs.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho. I would like to make a request, as we heard earlier talking about the self-supported budgets, that we expand the reporting on self-supporting budgets to be inclusive in the summary totals so that we have a better picture of what's going on and the legislature has a better understanding of our fiscal position.
Thank you, Regent Downs. Any other new business? Hearing none, I will move to public comment. Is there any public comment here at UNLV? Seeing none, I will ask SES if there is any public comment on the phone. Hearing none, I will then close the meeting at 9:11. We adjourn.